Join the Nation Recovery. It's a podcast dedicated to you, those in recovery, those looking for a positive message, and anyone needing a place of comfort. Join the Nation will bring you stories from people in recovery, the loved ones who are offering support, and how they're using their newfound freedom to help others along their journey. Each of us has a story. Our words can inspire, and this is your platform to shine the light of hope, strength, and courage. So welcome to the Nation. Here's your host, Stuart Michelson.
Thank you for listening into Join the Nation Recovery. I'm your host, Stuart Michelson. This podcast is brought to you on the Mental Health Radio Network. It's truly an honor to be with you, and I'm extremely humbled to be part of such a wonderful community of messengers who continue each and every day to offer our listeners hope, strength, and courage along their journey. Launching my podcast, I couldn't be more proud than to introduce you to Mr. Chris Beaudry. If you think you've heard that name before, maybe you have. The only member of the Humboldt Broncos coaching staff not involved in that horrific nightmare that took the lives of half his fellow teammates, coaches, and team broadcaster, Chris has given every bit of his hope, strength, and courage to his community during these very trying circumstances. A recovering addict going on 4 years, Chris's story is anchored by his roots. A farmer from a small town in Saskatchewan, Canada, Chris's journey from active addiction to recovery advocate for himself and his community will keep you glued. Through his grief, he remains steadfast about his recovery and his journey. A city and a nation who mourn the loss of these young men, the determination to soldier on is part of my guest's DNA. My friends, Mr. Chris Beaudry. Chris, how are you this evening?
I'm good. Had a really good day today. I mean, woke up, read my daily reflections and a few other books that I like to read in the morning, and had a good day working in the yard. So it was a great Sunday.
Awesome. It was pretty nice here in my neck of the woods. So I'm glad that the weather is finally cooperating a little bit better here north of the 49th parallel in Canada. And I mean, I've traveled to Saskatchewan before. I know the province not that well. I've been to Regina and I've been to Saskatoon. So, but you know, it, this time of the year, it's always nice to get some nice weather. So obviously you're in the crops business. So it's obviously a nice time to get the nice weather so you can get yourself going.
Absolutely. I got to get caught up and fired up here.
Excellent. First thing I wanted to ask you, tell us a little bit about your life today. You know, take us into your normal daily routine, including your recovery. What's it all about?
I mean, for me, the biggest thing, I have to live so in the day. I mean, so much. I used to plan everything. Be that all my drinking was planned. Every single time I went out, I was always checking my watch or checking my phone. What time is it? I need to know how much more time I have left to drink. I could only push it so far, so I was able to work. So now for me, I try to live every single bit of my life in the day, be that my recovery, my farming. And even for farming, it's odd to try to live in the day when you rely on the weather, you rely on a lot of stuff like that, and you still have to plan. But when I wake up, I really try to look at, okay, for today, I only understand that I can get so much work done on the tractor, depending on how many guys or how much of our staff are here for the day. And really, when I stay there, I'm a lot happier and a lot healthier.
Well, great. So your days are mainly at this time of the year are mainly on the rigs. Do I get that correctly?
Yeah. Once we're in the field, if we generally are working, Dad and I, anywhere is 18 to 21 hours a day. So it can get quite hectic and stuff. But even, I mean, the last 3 years, seeding has been a breeze when you don't have that massive anxiety that you did when you drank. Like, I would be panicked, one, just because the amount of work there was, it would always seem overwhelming for me. And two, I wanted to just get done so I could drink again, because I was the type of guy I controlled my drinking, right? I was in control, so I could stop proceeding and it was no problem. But it sure got weird when There was about a week left and the anxiety would take over. And I always told myself I was just excited to be done skiing, but it was going on 2 weeks, no drinking, and my body was turning against me.
So in other words, I guess you were, I had a friend of mine, when we were together this past week on a retreat, he talked about it being, he called it dope sick. I guess we would call it with you were going through withdrawals. Your anxiety was causing you to go through withdrawals. Your body was saying to yourself, where am I going to get my next drink? We're almost finished our work.
Exactly.
Okay, good. Listen, why don't you let us know a little bit about how you got from I guess a young man to your addiction, and from your addiction to where you are today in your recovery.
When I first started drinking, it was alcohol is a very very used substance where I'm from. People use it daily. They work. There's a lot of farmers do in this area, and it's not looked down upon to give your kid a beer here and there when he's 9, 10 years old. Oh, have a sip, have a half a beer. Then when you're 12 or something and there's a party going on, just grabbing two beers for you and a friend out of the fridge wasn't out of the norm. So by the time I was 13, 14, it seemed okay to go and get drunk. It was almost like a rites of passage kind of thing. And that went on through high school, from once a month to twice a month to once a weekend to Friday, Saturday, to by the time I graduated, it was Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Even though I was drinking that much, I had a lot of respect for my parents. Even after I graduated, I still lived at home because we farmed. And I would still ask to go out all the time up until I was probably 21. And that's when some of the drinking started to get bad enough where I almost felt like I had to hide it. So I would leave and I would just say, oh, I'm just going for a drive, or I'm going to play ball. I use sports a lot. And well, it's no big deal. I'm this drunk. I was just playing ball and everyone else was drinking. I mean, it's not the end of the world. And I didn't realize that I still was drinking Friday, Saturday, Sunday, but you had ball on Wednesday, and in the winter you had hockey Tuesday and Thursday. Well, that started to add up to more days of the week I was drunk than I was sober. And for me, it was so cyclical. I thought I was in control. And I would sober up for seeding and sober up for harvest because I knew I could and it wasn't a big deal. But then I would reward myself after with these really big parties, and I would cause a bunch of mayhem, be it crash a truck or getting impaired or getting a fight. Something bad would happen and then I would feel terrible. So I would take it easy for 2 weeks, 3 weeks maybe. And that cycle would just build then. And it would get back to a point where I would cause another incident. I was good for probably 4 or 5 a year, you know, pass out on the floor while cooking and almost burn the house down and all that kind of mayhem. I mean, it wasn't odd for me to have a new story every 2 to 3 months of something like that.
Okay. I got you there. I know what you're talking about when you talk about reward. I mean, I'm still in the car industry, but there was a point in time when just before I decided to go sober, that my psychologist had told me that, you know, it was my endorphins and my dopamine that was telling me that, you know, listen, it's, you know, it's the end of the night. Your reward for the end of the night is, listen, go down to your local convenience store, go down to your local, you know, wine store. I used to drink bottles of wine. It was 2 bottles for a wine for me. And so I understand what you're talking about when you talk about reward. But when you go from the reward and the thought process of, I can do this. I can stop for seeding. I can stop for harvest. When did it? It obviously got beyond that point where you were getting yourself into more trouble. You were talking about the accidents you were having and the trouble you were causing, but it must have gotten you into more problems that when you finally decided, you know what, maybe it's time for me to make a life change here?
Probably the last 3 to 4 years that I drank, the last three for sure, my mind started to turn against me. When I would drink, I would bargain with myself, and I would only, again, the only thing that my mind would tell me was, this is what we can do to get another drink. This is what we can do to drink another hour. Work's not that important Monday, so let's make sure we go out real late Sunday. Then that went from, I mean, simple bargaining to my mind telling me that my family was turned against me. They didn't understand who I was, so why would you go and hang out with them when the people down at the bar care about you? Or soon it got to that your friends and the people at the bar didn't care about me. So I would drink a lot by myself then. And I mean, once my mind started to slip, I don't know. I can't even really remember what my thought process was, but I ended up taking a trip to Vegas to play in a hockey tournament. And I got down there and the guys told me, oh, we messed up your paperwork, you can't play. And instantly my mind, because it was already in that process of thinking people were against me, that this was a setup. They didn't want me on the team. I knew none of these guys liked me. And so I went out on a wild tear. I spent about thousands of dollars I lost in the casino. And I drank all day and all night. And I ended up in a bar paying a DJ $100 ago to play George Strait over and over and over, until a bunch of people tried to fight me, or I tried to fight them, and I ended up running out of the bar and barely getting missed, getting hit by a bus. And I sat on the curb of a street for about 20 minutes thinking. I jumped in a cab, went to my hotel, got my passport, and jumped on the plane and came home. And when I got home, I pretty much cried in the basement for 2 days, for Saturday, Sunday. And then on Monday, I talked to a friend I knew in the program and went to AA. And since then, it's been a different, totally different world.
So I guess you'd say your rock bottom was your trip to Vegas and that hockey tournament that you didn't play in.
No, I think my rock bottom was actually a few months before. During our hockey season, I had a couple really bad blackouts, and I had actually shot a hole in the floor of my house with a shotgun. I'd gotten in some real heated fights with my wife. I stormed off with, again, for some reason, I had a fixation with guns. I mean, everyone out here has shotguns and rifles for hunting, but driving around totally blacked out with a bottle of Robaxacet and a hunting knife and a gun, and it got pretty dark. I think the Vegas trip made me review that bottom, where when I was sitting on the curb, I started to think about that night and a week before that, fist fighting my best friend and trying to go after him with a bottle, and reviewing those there made me realize where I was, and it was like, okay, now it's time to stop this shit.
Okay, so that's awesome. You know, it's great that you saw it, that you were able to, you know, see through the darkness, and you were able to notice that, you know, listen, I need to do something about this. You didn't get to a point where, you know, there's, you know, we hear lots of times stories about people getting to a point where, you know, it's not of their choice, that, you know, the choice has been thrusted upon them for good reason, and for, you know, and obviously, you know, you want to make sure that if you can make the choice, because this is a choice, right? You chose to drink, and now you've chosen to stop drinking. You know, you said to yourself, listen, I'm going to call, or you said, you know, in your mind, I call up my buddy and I said, you know what, I need to go to the program. I need to do something about this, because this is just getting way out of hand. Am I right?
Exactly. I mean, that was it. I had a bunch of questions for him. Well, what do you do? How do you feel? And whatnot. And I had an idea of what was going to happen just from the way I felt at Seeding and Harvest. I think by that time, I knew it wasn't I wasn't excited to party at the end of seeding and harvest. It was my body going through withdrawal, and I was ready for it this time, though, and it wasn't something I was fearing.
How many times have you tried several times to stop, or like you've just, your brain has said, okay, here, I'll stop a little bit, and then I'm going to go back. I stop, I go back. Then I finally decided I'm just stopping.
Well, there was three times where I said, I'm going to quit drinking for a bit, just so I thought I could control it. And I would stop for a month, 6 weeks, a couple months sometimes. And then when I would start again, I would drink like six beer and then switch to non-alcoholic beer or just not drink the rest of the night, just so I could prove to myself how in control I was. But I mean, that's what I had to tell myself daily when I drank was, look at, you know, you're in control. You were able to do this before and you could stop when you wanted. So everything's okay. Until I finally gave myself that honest look and it was like, yeah, this is a disaster and I caused it all. I mean, I always used to tell myself too, oh, God's only giving you these trials to make you stronger and better. When I was putting the problems I caused myself, I was blaming them on God. And that's such a backwards way of thinking.
100%. We talk about, you know, I always say this to people, you know, we talk about step four. Step four is our, you know, the moral inventory of ourselves. And I always talk to people and I say to them, you know what, there's one word I add extra, and I say that you've got to be brutally honest. You not just have to be honest with yourself, you've got to be brutally honest, because when you're not brutally honest with yourself, forget about it. You're just lying. You're lying to yourself. And when you're lying to yourself, you know, you lose all credibility with the person you've got to be credible with, and that's yourself. Forget about your God, which of course, you know, there are a lot of people that look up to their God or their higher power. But if you're not credible with yourself, forget about it. It ain't going to work.
Oh, I agree 100% on that. And I know for myself, the brutally honest part was important. And I know I had to find my good and my bad things, but I had to really look at, like, I almost thought I was bipolar for a while, because I had to build up this person when I drank. I would tell these stories that were, I mean, most of them were lies, and I believed them because I had such a low self-esteem that once I got sober, I had to honestly tell myself, Jesus Christ, like, almost everything I've said for the last 10 years has been nothing but bullshit. And I have no idea who I am. I don't know what I like. I don't know what I enjoy. I don't know what makes me happy anymore, because everything I did was a lie. And then to rediscover myself over the last 4 years has been absolutely amazing. To know that, like we talked about dopamine earlier, well, to just go for a drive and see a moose run across a field, I didn't realize how healing and how amazing that can be. I get that dopamine rush now, or taking 20 minutes out of my day to have lunch on the deck with my wife. How that's an enjoyable thing. Where to me, that was a pain in the ass before, because it took away time from me. And I was the only one that was important before.
Well, and that goes to your selfish behavior. And you know, you're right now, you're selfish in your recovery. You were selfish prior in your addiction. And now, you know, you've shown, I hate to say it, you've shown the world, somebody who is, you know, 4 years into his sobriety, but you've been you're selfish about yourself, but you're also yourself, you're a giving person. And you know, the world knows that. And it's unfortunate that the world had to learn this. And when I say learn it, I don't mean it in a bad sense. I mean it obviously in a good sense about, you know, about a story that's gripped this nation, Canada, very, 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 very much. And it's an incident that obviously you you have to deal with at the beginning of April. You know, can you speak a little bit to how your sobriety has continued on despite that devastating incident that happened? I think it was what, second, third of April?
The sixth of April. Yeah. So I actually had my 4-year sobriety date on the 5th. And so the next day the accident happened. And I mean, that day was, I actually this morning went back and kind of wrote a timeline down of everything that happened with my sister, because the events in my mind are all blurred and pretty messed up. But I know the day after, the Saturday, I had reached out to a member of my home AA group, and I said, I really could use an emergency meeting, not because I'm worried about drinking, but because I need to know how others have dealt with grief before. Because really, that's a touchy subject. A lot of times it doesn't come up at the table. And certain people, we talk about ourselves, how we deal with anger and how we deal with anxiety and resentments, but talking about grief doesn't come up very often. So on the Sunday we had a meeting and everyone shared, and I didn't want to share at first, but by the end of the meeting, what had came to me after listening to everyone was that I had felt numb and I wanted to hurt. I wanted to feel something so that I knew that I was either progressing or digressing or anything, so that I could start to try to work some sort of steps to get through the stages of grief. And later I found that took me like almost 3 weeks to get out of the shock stage to start feeling. But that was Sunday, and our home group meets on Monday night. So I went back again on Monday night, had another great meeting, and then met a fellow member on Thursday. And Thursday I was in a meeting in Regina, and we were talking about step one. And this hit home to me. My mind has still been just running circles those few days, and I was getting prepared for all the funerals. And we're talking about step one, and it gets read out. And the only words that I seen in it or heard were life and unmanageable, life and unmanageable. And everyone's talking, 30, 40 minutes go by, and that just keeps playing in my mind, life and unmanageable. And they asked me to speak, and I said to the folks who had been there a while, and there was a couple new members, they said, really, right now, my life seems like one of the most unmanageable lives probably is Canada or North America. But I said, I can tell you for a fact that my life was more unmanageable 4 years and 2 weeks ago when I was drunk. I had no idea how to live. I had no idea how to deal with problems. I had no idea how to be a husband, a father, a son, any of those things. But even though that I'm in massive pain, I've lost pretty much a family, an entire family of mine, that I still have the tools to get through this. I have the support I need to get through it. And most importantly, I know that I have my own mind, and with that, with my mind and my higher power and those tools, I can get through it. And to me, that sparked me moving forward. Like, what is the program giving me? If it has, I mean, I know what it has given me before that, but it strengthened my resolve, and it gave me the ability to get through this going day by day, minute by minute, and second by second sometimes. We're just having to go back to the simple things I did when I quit drinking, of just breathing in and out, feeling that cold air in and warm air out, to keep myself sane for just a minute, and then an hour, and then a day.
So I guess what you're trying to tell our listeners is that, you know, in your sobriety, you've accepted life on life's terms. You accept life as it comes at you, because at the end of the day, you know, you, and especially for you in this particular situation, you cannot choose how situations come at you. You can't choose these things. The only thing you can choose is your reaction to them. And I think what you're just telling us right now is, you know, your reaction to this horrific accident that took place in early April. you were able to handle it because you had the right tools to deal with such a situation.
Absolutely. I mean, I love how you to accept life on life's terms. I mean, if I wasn't accepting of this situation, I would be getting back to a point where I wasn't controlling my own mind again, where, and I know what happens when I'm not the master of my own mind. And that's where the thoughts of drinking and the thoughts of using come back. And I mean, for me, I look at who am I to change any of these events? I can't. I can only deal with what I have in front of me. And if, like off the start, if it was helping a family member through losing a son or losing a husband or a daughter, well, then that was what I had to do. I mean, I was given that day to do something, and I was given the next day, the Saturday, to do something. And if that was to go to the hospital and be with the guys, then that's what I did, because I still have just today in front of me. And just like right now, I've got today in front of me, and I'm using it to talk to you and get this message out to other people, because I feel now more than ever, I've been given a platform to help people. And what kind of person would I be if I didn't accept that and try and help as much as I can?
Well, and you know, first of all, as I said at the outset, we are so happy that you gave us the opportunity to speak with you here tonight on the Mental Health News Radio Network. And, you know, did you have at any point, like, I'm sure you have many a people call you and text you and get in contact with you, because obviously they were more, for the people who knew you, they were more nervous about what might happen to you as opposed to the whole situation. I mean, you know, listen, I remember seeing this on the news myself, and I'm saying, what the heck is going on here? It's like, you know, I'm reading this, and I read Saskatchewan, and I'm saying, all right. And then I heard your name, and it's like, holy moly. I remember texting you, just, and you know, like, you're sort of nervous because, like, I'm sending a text out to the guy, and like, I hope everything is okay with him. And then, you know, a couple seconds later, you were able to text back to me, and you said, listen, everything is fine. Or like, you're fine. Not everything's fine, but you're fine. And, you know, you just see the outpouring of emotion. I mean, you know, what was it? This was the last weekend of the NHL season. And the outpouring of emotion of your community. We are a community. We are a community here of like-minded people. That's why it's called Join the Nation, because we're like-minded. You and I both have a common bond, and that's our recovery. Well, the hockey world is a very, very small community, and I know you can speak to how small that community is.
It's been absolutely amazing. The people that have reached out, that have sent texts, sent food, sent and phone calls, everything. I mean, I always knew that the hockey world was close, and here's a great story on to put it into perspective. I love coaching just to be around the guys, to help kids become better men. And for me, I could get to the NHL or I could stay where I am, but I just love to be on the ice working with people. And my mother-in-law never really understood why I coached it, and it was always kind of looked at it as just a hobby or something I'll grow out of, until this happened and she realized it and told my wife, I get it now. I know why he does this. I can see the people he's helping through this, and Matt, I understand the 25 kids he works with every day, then how they must feel. And I think that light bulb coming on was really great for me to see. And then, I mean, secondly, it's hard to understand, like, how many people have reached out to our whole organization. I mean, like, the Moroccan Hockey Club sent a message on Facebook. Like, who knew that Morocco even had an ice rink? I mean, Mike Babcock had time to call me every day for 2.5 weeks. I mean, other NHL coach is a good friend of mine, Dallas Eakins. We've been in constant contact, and they've been invited me back to go down to San Diego just to hang out. And I mean, if I wasn't seeding, I probably would have. But the Winnipeg Jets flew me and scouts out just to get away for a day to watch a game. And I mean, Pittsburgh flying our players down there. It's unbelievable. I mean, there's more stories I could keep going on and on. There's been thousands of Facebook messages that we had to get a media company to help answer them, because I'm going to end up with carpal tunnel if I keep trying to answer all of these.
Did you, if I remember correctly, did you not get a message from Mr. Kraft from the New England Patriots as well?
Tyler Bieber's family did, our announcer, because he was a huge new Patriots fan. But I had gotten multiple calls. Joe Ehrman, who wrote Inside Out Coaching, he used to be an NFL lineman, and he was an addict as well. And he gave me a call, the former coach of Marshall University, who took on the team after their plane crash, Jack Langell. He called, and I mean, that's not even the hockey community. I mean, those are both football guys. And I mean, the words that they gave me too, it's the same thing you hear from so many of us that sit at the tables in the meetings. They're just, get through today, focus on yourself right now. You know that you're most important person if you don't take care of yourself. And I'm not sure if they are in the program or if they aren't, but to hear that message from all different people, all different areas, it hits home that what I'm doing, what I'm focusing on myself, is the right thing to do.
Well, and it is, like I said, you know, the GoFundMe campaign, I mean, in 48 hours had just an enormous amount of money. I think it was something like $2 million in 48 hours was already raised for the GoFundMe for this whole project. And, you know, something like this, you know, it touches us not just as Canadians, Americans, it touches us as human beings, because, you know, nobody wants to see this type of tragedy happen in any way, shape, or form. Second of all, nobody wants to see kids, you know, and, you know, it's incredible that what kind of sorrow that's gone through that community. You know, it's a small community in northern Saskatchewan. So it's not a huge town, but everybody knows everybody. So that was what makes it even more devastating. And just the fact that, you know, a man like yourself, you know, all you're doing is you're a farmer. You're a simple guy. You're a farmer. You're a hockey coach. You're a community leader. You're a guy in recovery, a guy who's just going day by day. The amount of impact you've had on your family, your extended family, your community, your nation, I mean, you deserve all, I'm trying to think of the words, you deserve kudos for being able to shoulder this, because the shoulder's got to be big. And like I said earlier on, you've dealt with this on life's terms. You've taken it one day at a time. And there, we, as a community of like-minded people, we as a community, a nation, of all the respect for you and everything you've done for your community.
Well, I appreciate that. I really do. When I look at it and review it right now, I think for myself as a person that's in recovery, what I've learned through the 12 steps and through some other life work I've done, I mean, I couldn't do this any other way. I talk every day at the rink about being selfless on the ice, about being selfless outside of the rink to players, and trying to be a selfless leader or servant leader. Well, if I preach that, I mean, how can I not live it? I mean, I talk the talk, you got to walk the walk. And if I want to talk about being selfless and being a servant leader, what, not to say better time, because this isn't a better time, but to be put on a stage like this and to show what being a servant leader and being a selfless human can be and how it can help people. I mean, there was There was no time that, than the present I was set with to do that.
Talk to me about, we were talking just a second ago, we were talking about how, you know, your sobriety has been a very, very big part of your hockey practice. Talk to me about a gentleman I've read about, Blair Robertson. I heard that Blair had left one end of the country, Corner Brook, came to Saskatchewan. And the reason why I'm asking about this, because I heard about this story, like I heard your podcast with one of my colleagues, Soaring in Sobriety, and you were talked about how you use your sobriety on a daily basis to make the kids and help the kids to be better human beings. Talk to us a little bit about how you do that.
Well, where I start with is I really focus everything on the ice first, and I try to get them used to pattern behavior. Okay, are we finding good patterns on the ice and bad patterns? Once they kind of start to believe that, we try to figure out, where are these patterns coming from? Is there an anger issue we're dealing with? Even if it's something good, how does this continually happen? Once they start to believe in what I'm talking about, then I push it on to the life aspect. Okay, is there a pattern in your life that we're noticing maybe is a little undesirable, or that is good, either or? And we start to, I try to build a base on why these good and bad things continue to happen. What can we do to make the good things happen over and over and over again? Is it a mindset thing? Are you a positive guy that every single day you're telling yourself, I'm going to be at my best, and that's why these things are happening? Well, let's continue that and let's add to it. If you're having problems where you make a mistake and then you melt down and you go into a fit of anger, and that's happening on the ice, are we seeing that in your day-to-day life? Are you at work? Are you, like some of the kids or some of the guys I've coached have been anywhere from 40 years old to 15. So is this happening at home when something messes up? Why is it? Is it an alcohol issue? Is it a mindset issue? Is it something when you screw up, you start telling yourself that negative talk goes, oh, I'm such an idiot, I'm such a loser. Well, let's break it down. And instead of worrying about what's going to happen after, we wipe it clean. Instead of living in a day for these guys on the ice, we go to, let's live in a shift, or let's live in a play. Yeah, you screwed up the last play. It's gone. You're never seeing it again. The play in the future ain't ever coming, because when it does, it's the present. So let's worry about that right now. Live totally in the moment on the ice. And then we're going to live totally in the moment outside of the rink. Live in the day after that. And we just get them rolling on that positive patterns and living in the day. And we really see some major changes with guys throughout the year. I mean, from where we started this year with a few, where we ended, it was amazing.
Well, and it looks like you're a life coach as well as a hockey coach all at the same time, and I'm not sure if that's what you're trying to do, but I know you're trying to teach these young men and everyone you've coached, you're trying to teach them some life lessons, because you know the rink is a small sort of representation of how their life is. So, you know, like we talked about, you know, dealing with life on life's terms, you deal with a play, you deal with a hit, you deal with a penalty, you deal with a goal being scored on your net, you know, you deal with all these things. And you know, our minds play games with us, you know, why did I do it? And I can see that, you know, your life coaching skills for these young men is just phenomenal.
Oh, and I think that's the most important thing in the end. I mean, we could focus on hockey and drills and skills and video all the time, but some of these guys, they'll come to a junior A program and they may be done hockey after 4 years. Some may get a scholarship and have four more. Some may be very lucky enough to get a pro deal after university and play 10, 12 years. But So if we get the longest version of this, they're sitting at what, 36, 40 maybe? Maybe if they're very lucky and they're done hockey. So if we just focused on hockey skills, what have we taught them besides that? Nothing. Those life skills are what are going to last forever. What kind of father, what kind of son, what kind of husband are they coming out of the Humboldt Broncos program to be? I mean, I like to take cutouts of the newspaper and you show a job posting. Where does it say in the job posting in a wanted ad, must be good at hockey? It says, want someone reliable, who's honest, able to work with others. Those are the things that you got to teach. Like, I mean, we've heard a lot about the Broncos motto that was put out by our head coach Darcy. And I mean, it's built on character. And that's what we try to do every single day, is bring out character. This is my motto. I want to help boys become men of empathy, integrity, who will lead, be responsible, and change the world for good. It's my why, and it's what drives me. I mean, if I'm doing that every day, the hockey will come. It'll teach itself pretty much. If we teach leaders, we teach empathy, we teach integrity, then we're winning. We're winning at all aspects of the sport then.
Awesome. I recently saw you tweeted something. You tweeted out a mantra. It says, just for today. Do you remember putting that out?
Yep.
What's that all about? I know what it's about, but why don't you tell my listeners what it's all about? Because it struck me when I read it, and I'm saying to myself, this guy, Chris, he's taking things one day at a time, and that's what this is telling me.
Well, when I decided to share it, I had read it through recovery, and a counselor had sent it to me early after this accident. And reading it then, it really hit home for me. I was told I was in nurturing mode. There are different types of shock, and I was in nurturing mode trying to help people nonstop, and that's what was keeping me going. And I thought, what better message could I pass on right now to all these folks who are grieving, that the message of just living in today, reading it in so many different ways. Just for today, I'm doing this. I'm doing A, I'm doing B, I'm doing C, I'm doing D, just for today. And with having that platform, like I talked about, it ended up, I think it was one of the most active tweets I ever had. And I think it helped a lot more people than just the ones I was trying to hit it home to.
Well, I'll put it to you this way. It hit home with me, and that's why I wanted to talk to you about it. It's it's a very reflective tweet that you put out, and I've seen a couple other ones that you've put out recently and would you say now that it's a reflection of how you're feeling today, the tweeting that you're doing now? Would you say it's a reflection of how you're feeling today, and are the emotions from that fateful evening coming to the surface? Are you coming to grips with, you know, you said to me earlier that you went by the site and you did a timeline, because you know you still didn't really have it all, you know, in your mind. You know, from what we read in the newspapers, you were about 20 minutes behind this particular bus at the time. So is this your way of coming, not to grips, because it's going to be take you a while to come to grips with a situation like this, but is it your way of beginning to get to the healing process, get to the part where it's like, I'm accepting now, I've been in shock, but I'm accepting now what the Lord has brought upon us here, and how you're going to go forward with it?
I guess it'll be two parts to answer this. One, the reason I started tweeting this stuff was once I got sober, I didn't really want to share anything. I didn't want people to know I got sober. I felt bad about it until I started feeling good. Then I started to share some things on Facebook, on social media, and I would share just how I was feeling that day, or how AA had started to change my life. I would share different sayings or readings I would have. And then I noticed people started to reach out to me. Hey, you're doing great, man. I'm proud of you. Or the ones that really mattered were, hey, would you take me to my first meeting? Or, hey, I'm having a problem with alcohol and drugs. Can I talk to you? And once those first messages came in, I thought, how can I stop sending out stuff like this? I mean, if people are reaching out to me for help now, then I have to. Once the accident happened and I seen my, I mean, I went from, I think, 90 followers or 100 followers to, I think, 1,500 in a couple of days. And I sent out just that Just for Today tweet. I thought, okay, we've got that platform like we had on Facebook. We can't stop now. I know I'm helping others. So if I'm posting it on Facebook, let's put her out on Twitter. And those who feel like they want to read it, if it's going to help them, I'm so happy that it is. The coming to terms with stuff, I know the last week, week and a half, I've really started, it's felt like real life. I was starting to go through a bit of the process. I had a little bit of anger, not towards anyone from the accident, just more towards myself. I was angry with just what had happened. And I'm grateful that I understand that this is part of the grief process. I have some really good counselors and support that have helped me to understand what steps are going to happen. And after the anger, there was finally the emotion, the pain that I'd been waiting for. I'd been wanting to feel that so that I knew I was healing. And that was 3 or 4 really rough days. Now it's the last probably 4 or 5 days has just been more of, you'll get something out of the blue, a song on the radio will hit, or I'll be driving by. I've got certain triggers I have to watch out for my PTSD right now. And I'll catch something like that, and one of the triggers will really hit me hard, and I've got to pull over if I'm driving, or even if I'm just walking in the yard, I might have to just stop working for a half hour, go inside and breathe, hang out for a little bit, play with my kids, that helps, and then get back at her. Because, I mean, if I try to fight how I'm feeling, I don't think I'm going to heal. So I just got to take it how it comes.
Oh, and those are excellent words to live by. As we've been talking down for the last almost an hour, we've been talking about, you know, accepting life on life's terms, and as long as you can do that, and as long as you have the support, because you have the support of a nation, you have the support of a community, you have the support of everybody who you've spoken to. And, you know, whenever you need to, you know, reach out to anybody, you know, whether it be, you know, your pastor, whether it be your psychologist, whether it be your coaches in your fraternity, because I know you've got a huge fraternity. The hockey community is a huge fraternity. If you need to reach out to any of your recovery community, I know they're all out there for you. I got to ask you a question. Getting into more onto the subject now, back to your recovery. What would you say is the best piece of advice you received when you began your journey into recovery?
There was an old guy that was in AA when I started, and he's passed on now, but he said, make your program big enough to fit in your hand, and only handle what you can fit in your hand for that day. So don't look at, oh my God, I've got to get through these 12 steps. I've got to figure out what's wrong with me, and I've got to apologize to these people, and I've got to accept God and myself and all this, and I've also got to do this while not drinking and working and living. No, I can put what I can put in my hand. And for the first few months, it was just to say, today I'm an alcoholic. That's it, and that's all I had to do today. Once I got through some steps, I only had to find out one thing that was wrong with me today, or maybe one good thing. Because if I tried to work the whole program in one day, I wasn't getting her done.
So, again, we keep getting back to this same subject, and I'm glad that we're doing it. you're talking about everything being one day at a time, one step at a time, one foot in front of the other, one note ahead of the next, one word in front of another. You know, you're an example today of a human being who just takes it as it comes, who accepts it as it comes, and who addresses the issues as it comes. And there's nothing better than in our fraternity, that is the recovery fraternity, than just accepting things one day at a time, accepting them as they come, and reacting as they come. And I can't say more about how you have taken on a challenge that, you know, the Lord has asked you to take on this challenge, and I'm telling you, you've taken it on better than most people probably would have in their lifetime, because this has not been easy, but you've done it because you have a great program and you've worked that program, and we can see that you've worked that program.
Yeah, I mean, like we've talked about before, I know the tools that AA gave me has given me the strength to get through this and the ability to do it. I'm so grateful. I tried to imagine what it would have been like going through this when I drank. I mean, if I would still be drinking. So I know I went through something similar, not near as bad. I was in a bus accident before in 2011, and the people that hit our hockey team passed away, but everyone on the team was okay, and we drank through that, and I know how bad that was. Oh, I probably wouldn't be here talking with you right now a month after an accident like this if I'd have been drinking.
Well, first of all, we're glad that you weren't drinking. And we are so grateful that you've taken the time to spend with us. I've got two more little questions to ask of you before we close off our evening. One of the things, what would be the best resource that you could give a new member as they begin their journey?
I love a book, Walk in Dry Places. It's almost like a longer version of Daily Reflections. And for me, it's like a short story a day to start my day, almost like very similar. The every month is tied to a step, and the stories in it really are good, because I found it seems everyone's so busy nowadays and life is so fast and so quick moving that if you can only read a page or two a day, and that give you a piece of guidance or that aha moment, yeah, that is me, and I can be better than the guy I was before, then sometimes that's all you need to get through that day.
Yeah, I use actually, probably you've heard of it, the quote of the day, Sean Croxton.
Yep. I love that podcast.
Yeah, I listen to Sean every day, and he's always got great people on there, you know, Dr. Wynn Dyer, Les Brown, Tony Robbins. I mean, I remember Tony Robbins had a great one. It was, and this actually reflects upon a little bit of you, if you take your worst day and look at it, and you can see how it'll become your best day. It was a podcast or a message that he gave out a couple about a month ago. And it was just a very, very powerful message. And it's not just because of the messenger, because, you know, we know that Tony Robbins is a huge messenger out there in the life community. But you, my friend, are a messenger, a huge messenger out there, a person who is, like you said earlier, you're just given of yourself now. It's not about you. You've given of yourself, and your community and this nation could not be more in better hands than having someone like yourself able to help that community that you're helping right now.
Thank you again.
The last question I want to ask you, Chris, before we close up is, I think Join the Nation Recovery, what Join the Nation Recovery is, like I said, we're a like-minded community. We're a community where people can go and speak freely about their own problems. And one of the things I'm doing right now is it's called the Join the Nation Challenge. And what it is I'm trying to challenge each one of my guests to just go out there and help one more person in who needs help in our community. I would be 100% understanding if you couldn't be able to meet this challenge, not because you've got enough challenges on your plate right now, but the challenge is simply if you can find just one person who needs help in recovery, if you could help one person to bring them to a meeting, to get them into a program, would you be willing to help us join the nation and that challenge of helping one more person in the community?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I've been working on a few folks, before this accident to try and get them along. And about 2 weeks in, I finally got a message back from one person saying, "Oh, I heard you on TV. I've seen you through this. I've seen your social media posts." And it opened up a dialogue that I had shut down for almost a year, where I said, okay, I was at a point where until you're ready and when you're ready, I'll be here. They opened up those lines of communication again. And actually tomorrow, I'm really hoping this person comes to a meeting with me.
That is awesome. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to first take the opportunity to thank Chris Beaudry for spending some time with us tonight. As I said, this is my initial inaugural podcast with the Mental Health News Radio Network, but I wanted you to understand a man who's in recovery, a man who's gone through a very difficult time, and yet a man who is taking it one day at a time. He's accepted life on life's terms, and he's reacting and he's giving to of himself just based on the needs of his community. Chris, thank you very much for this wonderful chat tonight. And on behalf of us here at the Mental Health News Radio Network, all Canadians, people of North America, the world, we thank you for the work you're doing. And God bless you, and God bless your community, and God bless the province of Saskatchewan.
Thanks, brother.
Thank you, and thank you, ladies and gentlemen, and we will see you next week with another episode of Join the Nation Recovery.
Thank you for listening in to Join the Nation Recovery. I hope you've been inspired to ask for help, support someone in recovery, or simply learn valuable lessons from our stories. Join the Nation is brought to you on the Mental Health News Radio Network. Listen in next time as our guests continue to shine a bright light along their journey. If you'd like to be a guest on our show, you can reach out to us at askmeformyhelp.com, and that's askme4myhelp.com. We'd love to hear your story and shine your light for our listeners. Don't forget to visit us at jointhenationrecoveryradio.com. Until we meet again, have an awesome day wherever you may be. The opinions on this show are solely those of the hosts and their guest. Join the Nation neither endorses or supports any one path of recovery. We support paths that lead to a healthy and sober life. Thanks for joining us.